So, if you are dipping a toe into modern spiritual exploration today, you probably have this like very specific image in your head.
Oh, yeah. Like
Correct?
sitting on a plush cushion, right?
Exactly. Sitting on a cushion, or maybe some calming app voice is telling you to notice your breath. You might be at a weekend retreat surrounded by trees, just trying to unplug from your phone.
It is totally packaged as this peaceful, relaxing escape.
Right. But what actually happens when you start pulling at the threads of your own consciousness? Because instead of peace, sometimes you trigger this absolute terrifying upheaval of your entire reality.
Which is incredibly common, actually.
Yeah, so today we are going deep into the raw, sometimes really chaotic trenches of the mind in this deep dive. We're looking at what happens when that initial unpredictable shock of spiritual discovery hits you.
And, why committing to a rigid ancient lineage might be the only way to keep yourself from burning out after you have tasted everything at the modern wellness buffet.
I kind of think of it like getting a massive jolt of electricity. It is thrilling, but without a properly installed grounding wire like a lineage, you are just going to burn out your circuits entirely.
That is a great way to put it. The contrast between the marketing of mindfulness and the visceral reality of deep spiritual work is honestly jarring.
Definitely.
We often approach these practices looking for a quick psychological fix, a way to optimize our workday. But these tools were originally designed to dismantle the ego entirely.
It is like finding a nuclear reactor and trying to use it to charge your smartphone.
Exactly. The sheer power of these ancient mind technologies is just immense. The initial spark rarely looks like a peaceful sit on a cushion.
So we have this story from our sources that perfectly captures this collision. There is this guy named Aaron. When he was 18, just about to head off to college, he got his hands on a book about yoga.
Oh boy, 18 is a dangerous age for that.
Totally. So he flips to the back and finds this section on advanced breathing exercises. They're called pranayama, and they are meant to drastically alter your autonomic nervous system.
Right. And usually those books explicitly warn you not to try them at home without a highly qualified teacher.
Which to an 18-year-old is basically a dare.
Oh, 100% an invitation.
Right. So he completely ignores the warning. He sits down and just forces his way through these really intense breathing patterns.
And what happens next is what his tradition calls a Kundalini awakening.
Yeah, exactly. In yogic philosophy, Kundalini is this dormant, super potent energy sitting at the base of the spine. When you awaken it prematurely, without years of preparing your nervous system, it does not bring enlightenment.
Yeah, it brings pure chaos.
Complete chaos. Aaron said it felt like unleashing a dragon of energy inside his body. He suddenly had fireworks going off in his mind. He could not sleep normally, and his perception of reality just warped.
He said it felt borderline psychotic.
Yes, exactly that.
Well, let's break down the mechanics of what he is experiencing there, because this is not just a shift in perspective. This is a profound physiological overload.
Like blowing a fuse.
Precisely. By forcing those breathing exercises, he bypassed all the safety valves of his nervous system. We walk around with deeply ingrained neurological habits, the way we process stress, the way we relate to our bodies.
Right.
Suddenly, an overwhelming amount of raw sensory and bioenergetic data is flooding his system all at once.
And he realized very quickly that his normal college life was just over before it even started. He had been partying, drinking, smoking, and this newly awakened energy in his body flat out violently rejected all of it.
Wow.
Yeah. He actually became physically ill when he tried to maintain his old habits. He was forced to drastically clean up his lifestyle. To survive the overload, he had to seek out a teacher in Ashtanga yoga.
And the choice of Ashtanga there is highly specific and totally necessary for his condition.
Awesome.
Well, Ashtanga is not gentle stretching. It is a rigorous, physically grueling sequence of postures that links heavy, audible breathing with relentless movement.
So it is a real workout.
Oh, it demands total muscular engagement. When your mental energy is erratic and shooting upward, mimicking a manic state like his was, you need a heavy structural container.
To pull that energy back down.
Exactly, down into the muscles, the bones, the physical earth. He needed the strict boundaries of Ashtanga just to ground his system so he could function in society.
So Aaron induced his own shock by being reckless. But sometimes the shock arrives completely uninvited.
Oh, absolutely.
It can shatter your worldview without you ever doing a single breathing exercise. Take Jackie's experience from our sources. She was a working veterinarian. a staunch agnostic atheist who had completely rejected the religion of her childhood.
Because it failed every logical test she threw at it, I think she said.
Right. She is living a highly secular, scientifically grounded life. And then she has this hyper-vivid dream.
A dream with such intense psychological rate that it functions more like a waking vision.
Yeah, she dreams she is standing in her garden, and a live Tibetan monk arrives with a massive, ornate procession. They have come to take him away to be her teacher, but before they leave, they place gifts all over her yard.
That is wild.
It is. She wakes up, and her agnostic scientific reality is completely charred. The sensory details of the robes, the profound feeling of presence, it was so undeniable.
And she didn't just brush it off.
Not at all. This atheist veterinarian immediately drives to a bookstore, buys every single book they have on Tibetan Buddhism,
right,
and completely reroutes her entire life trajectory based on that single night.
That is a massive pivot.
But looking at these two events, I have to ask, are these explosive, dramatic moments required to start a genuine spiritual path?
That is the big question.
Right. Aaron feeling like he is losing his mind, Jackie having her scientific worldview shattered by a dream. To be blunt, it sounds dangerous. If you don't have proper guidance waiting in the wings, are these awakenings actually just massive, terrifying detours?
It is a critical distinction to make. The explosive moment itself is not the goal. And yes, it is absolutely a dangerous detour if left unmanaged.
So why do they happen?
To understand why these shocks happen, we have to look at the psychological architecture we all live in. Aaron describes our daily reality as a house of cards.
Okay, a house of cards.
Yeah. We build our identities out of cultural illusions, professional titles, capitalist structures, and the endless narratives we tell ourselves to feel safe.
Right.
When a genuine spiritual opening occurs, that house of cards just collapses. The mind literally cracks open to a broader reality. But, and this addresses your skepticism, while the illusion is gone, the practitioner is left entirely unmoored.
Because you have the massive jolt of electricity, but you have zero wiring to carry the current.
Exactly.
You are just a live wire sparking dangerously on the floor.
That is a perfect analogy. The awakening wakes you up, but it gives you absolutely no instructions on what to do next. It does not tell you how to integrate that expansive, shattering energy into the mundane reality of paying your taxes.
Or navigating family conflicts.
Or simply existing in a crowded grocery store without having a panic attack. The shock dismantles the ego, but you still need an ego to function in the world.
Which is exactly why a structure, attested historical lineage is desperately needed. It provides the wiring.
Precisely.
Which brings us to the modern dilemma. Because once you feel that initial spark, even if it is just a tiny realization that your thoughts are driving you crazy, the immediate temptation is to hit the spiritual buffet.
Oh, the wellness buffet. It is everywhere.
It is. We live in an era of infinite customization. We want to grab a little mindfulness for focus, some weekend breath work for trauma release, maybe some crystals for energy.
And blend it all into a custom spiritual smoothie.
Exactly. But the transition from the thrill of the spark to actual deep, boring commitment is where the real transformation happens. Why pick one rigid path instead of making your own?
Well, Jackie's journey really illuminates the necessity of choosing one path. When she dove into Buddhism following her dream, she discovered it was not just a collection of inspiring quotes. It possesses a massive, highly technical curriculum. It is an incredibly structured, step-by-step pathway designed to tame the wildness of the human mind.
And she warns very strongly against sampling the buffet.
She does, because you end up with a shallow understanding of many things and a mastery of nothing.
She realized that to gain any true depth, you have to stick with one practice long enough for the friction of it to wear down your specific ego defenses.
Yeah.
She ended up choosing the Tibetan Bon tradition.
Yeah.
And the timeline here is staggering. This tradition is the indigenous pre-Buddhist religion of Tibet, and it claims roots going back 14,000 to 18,000 years.
That is just, it's hard to even fathom.
It eventually integrated with Buddhist mind training, created this incredibly deep well of knowledge.
Just consider the sheer weight of that timeline. That represents thousands of years of human beings testing, refining, failing, and passing down specific cognitive techniques for handling the human mind.
Peer-reviewed over millennia.
Exactly. They mapped out the pitfalls, the psychological traps, the weird dead ends your brain will try to take when you start meditating.
It makes me think of a sourdough starter.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. A true spiritual lineage is like a centuries-old cultivated culture of yeast. If you want to bake incredible bread, you don't just mix your own random flour and tap water on your kitchen counter, stare at it, and hope it ferments into something highly nutritious.
No, left to your own devices, you will probably just grow mold and make yourself sick.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You want to borrow the proven, cultivated culture that has survived the test of time, a culture that generations of bakers have kept alive through famine and war.
The cultivation aspect is key, and it brings up the massive issue of trust. We live in an era that is deeply and often rightfully skeptical of massive institutions.
So true.
So how do you find a lineage you could actually trust? Aaron has a very pragmatic methodology for this. He looks for an unbroken chain of transmission.
Right. He specifically warns against what he calls fractured side projects.
Yes. These are the pop-up spiritual centers started by someone who studied for 3 years, decided they were enlightened, and broke off from the main lineage without the permission of their teachers.
He notes that if a teacher does not have a clean, unbroken chain of permission from their own master, there's usually a very good, usually ego-driven reason for it.
Almost always.
Furthermore, he looks for lineages that handle human failure correctly. Humans are humans, meaning scandals will happen. The marker of a trustworthy lineage isn't perfection, it is public accountability.
Right. They have a transparent reconciliation process, and they do not hide their history.
They operate like tested peer-reviewed technologies of the mind. Committing to one removes the exhausting, practically impossible burden of having to reinvent the wheel of human consciousness all by yourself.
You are stepping into a stream of knowledge that already knows exactly how your ego is going to fight back.
But here is the rub. You cannot just download an 18,000-year-old lineage from the cloud.
No, you cannot.
You have to access it through a human interface. Mm. You have to deal with a teacher. And moving from the beautiful abstract texts to a flawed human sitting in a room with you causes an immense amount of friction.
Especially for the highly individualized Western mind, it causes friction because it demands a mechanism we are taught to resist surrender.
Well, definitely.
We are conditioned to be self-reliant consumers of information. But spiritual transmission requires a relational dynamic. Joe Evans introduces a brilliant analogy for this dynamic called the hook in the ring.
Right, so the teacher is the hook, right? They possess the realization, the presence, and the skill to pull you upward out of your own mental mud.
Yes.
But they're completely useless to you if you haven't done the work to cultivate your own inner teacher to act as the ring.
Precisely. You have to build the ring through your own humility, your daily solo practice, and your willingness to be corrected.
Otherwise, you just slip right off.
If you show up with a massive ego and no ring, the hook of the teacher's wisdom just swings right past you. You simply cannot catch the teachings.
Jude and Emma, a couple from our sources who utilize Buddhist practices to manage their daily lives, reflect deeply on the tension of this dynamic. Jude points out how deeply uncomfortable the concept of guru devotion feels for Westerners.
Oh, it feels entirely alien.
Right. In Eastern cultures, stepping into a hierarchical role of deep reverence is culturally congruent. But here, the idea of willfully surrendering your autonomy to a spiritual teacher feels dangerous.
It triggers all our alarms.
He observes that the closest secular equivalent we have in the West is the intimate, highly vulnerable dynamic of psychotherapy.
The psychotherapy comparison is incredibly apt. In deep therapy, you experience transference. You project your parental issues, your fears, and your desires onto the therapist.
And the therapist uses that projection to help you see your own mind.
Exactly. A spiritual teacher does the same thing on a much larger scale. It requires profound ethical boundaries because the vulnerability is absolute.
Which makes Kim H's observations so vital. We are living in a post-Me Too era, and we have seen numerous scandals shake various spiritual communities in the West.
We have.
She emphasizes that we must constantly remember that teachers are human beings. They should never be put on pedestals as infallible deities. The Buddha himself was just a guy who figured out a path to end suffering.
Right, he was human.
The container, meaning the human teacher and the organizational institution, is naturally flawed and prone to corruption. But the contents, the teachings themselves, are timeless.
Separating the container from the contents is a required survival skill for modern practitioners. You can hold deep reverence for the lineage without blindly worshiping the individual delivering it.
I hear all of this, but I have to push back hard on this point.
Okay, let's hear it.
If we know these teachers are just flawed humans, if we know they are prone to ego, power trips, and scandal, why take the gamble? If the ultimate goal is my own internal realization, why do I need them at all?
It is a fair question.
Why can't I just buy the translated ancient texts, sit alone in my living room, and practice by myself? Why invite that human messiness into my spiritual life?
It is a completely valid skepticism, and frankly, avoiding the human messiness is the safer route on paper. It is a massive gamble.
So why do it?
Because a lineage is not a data transfer. It is a living, breathing relationship. A book cannot look you in the eye and call you out when you are lying to yourself.
That is true.
A book cannot see your blind spots. Kim H. highlights the reality of solo practice. Sitting alone in your room is excruciatingly difficult. Your ego is incredibly smart.
You will find a way out.
It will play tricks on you. It will convince you that you are making progress when you are really just daydreaming, and eventually your motivation will dry up.
She pointed out the energetic difference, too. Sitting alone feels like pushing a boulder uphill, but sitting with 10 other people is a completely different cumulative energetic experience.
That is the power of the Sangha, the community of practitioners. The Sangha provides a sacred collective momentum that carries you when your own willpower fails.
They act as mirrors.
Exactly. You cannot see your own psychological defense mechanisms clearly. You need the human friction of a teacher and a community to polish the stone of your mind.
Okay, so we understand the mechanics. We need the grounding wire of the lineage to handle the electricity. We need the peer-reviewed technology of the mind. We need the human teacher to act as the hook and the community to keep us honest.
Right.
But what is the actual output of all this effort? Because when Jackie reads the ancient Tibetan text, she mentions stories of ancient masters levitating, flying, or walking through solid rock.
Which she views with a polite scientific curiosity, of course.
Naturally. But the real magic that these modern practitioners talk about is shockingly practical.
The true magic of these lineages is not about bending the laws of physics. It is about fundamentally rewiring how you navigate the mundane mud of your daily life. It is highly applied psychology.
Look at Joe Evans. He's the professional violinist playing in a fiercely competitive symphony orchestra. He suffered from a mental state his teacher identified as cold pride.
Cold pride. That is an interesting term.
It is. This isn't the arrogant, loud pride where you walk around thinking you are better than everyone else. Cold pride is the quiet pride of self-degradation.
Go ahead.
It is the ego insisting that you are uniquely terrible, that you are permanently stuck and incapable of improvement. He was paralyzed by professional jealousy. He would sit in the orchestra and feel physically awful when the violinist next to him played a beautiful solo.
That is a deeply painful, very human experience, especially in a high-pressure environment where your worth is constantly evaluated.
Exactly. But Joe committed to the Dzogchen lineage. Dzogchen is a tradition that focuses heavily on recognizing the innate primordial perfection of the mind that already exists beneath our neurotic thoughts.
Okay.
His teacher looked at his cold pride and told him point blank, "You need to think you are good." He instructed Joe to actively practice rejoicing in the success of his competitors.
Wow, that is difficult.
Very. But Joe radically shifted his motivation. Instead of playing the violin to prove he was the best or to avoid criticism, he decided his sole intention would be to play simply to bring joy to the audience and his colleagues.
He changed the entire framework.
He used the tools of his lineage to completely dismantle his ego-driven motivation. And he said it entirely transformed his toxic workplace environment. He started genuinely loving his fellow musicians.
That is the exact mechanism of the practice at work. He didn't change the orchestra. He changed his cognitive relationship to it.
Right.
Emma and Jude do the exact same thing in their marriage. They use Buddhist analytical tools, specifically looking at how phenomena arise from dependent conditions, to detangle their relationship conflicts.
Because they both have demanding careers and are raising children.
Exactly. Jude talked about how easy it is to bring the inflated, defensive professional ego home from the office and unleash it on your spouse.
Right. If someone snaps over the dishes, it suddenly escalates into a war of identities.
But their practice allows them to step back in real time. They can deconstruct the argument. They can see that the anger isn't a solid, permanent trait of their partner, but just a temporary clash of conditions, stress, exhaustion, miscommunication.
So they drop the ego at the door.
Yeah, and navigate their conflicts not as two warring individuals protecting their pride, but by understanding that their relationship is a fluid, co-constructed dynamic.
They are essentially using 18,000-year-old software to debug a Tuesday night argument over chores.
Exactly.
But the most profound example of the fruit of this practice comes from Kim H. She talks about watching her father, who had been practicing Vipassana meditation for decades.
Vipassana is insight meditation, right?
Yes. It is the tedious, rigorous practice of scanning the body, observing sensations, and deeply realizing that everything, every pain, every joy, every thought is impermanent. It arises and it passes away.
He trained his mind for years to stop clinging to temporary states.
And that training met its ultimate test. He suffered a stroke and ended up in the intensive care unit. Facing the end of your life in a sterile hospital room is the ultimate crisis.
Oh, absolutely.
But Kim H. said he faced his mortality with absolutely zero fear. When she asked him if he was afraid, he essentially told her, no, this is exactly what the Buddha talked about.
Whoa.
This is the natural, unavoidable process of the body aging and dying. He met the terrifying reality of his own death with total ease and grace.
To face the dissolution of your own physical body without terror is astounding. It speaks to the absolute efficacy of the lineage.
It is like building a crisis savings account.
Yeah.
When you were sitting on a cushion meditating every single day, doing these repetitive chants, or simply noticing your breath for the 10,000th time, it can feel like you are making tiny, tedious, invisible deposits.
Yeah, you don't fully see the value of that mental currency on a random sunny Tuesday.
Exactly. But then the massive storm of your life hits, a medical emergency, a sudden career collapse, a devastating relationship crisis, and suddenly you check that internal account.
And it's full.
Because of the lineage, because of the daily grind, you find you have exactly the inner resources you need to survive the storm without collapsing.
Because the ultimate liberation promised by committing to a lineage isn't about escaping the world or floating away to a peaceful mountain.
Right.
It is about recognizing that you do not have to be a victim of your own chaotic, negative thinking. The lineage gives you the structural tools to meet reality exactly as it is, even the harshest realities of aging, sickness, and conflict, with unwavering grace.
So to pull all of these threads together for you, we started with the wild, unpredictable spark of spiritual exploration, that shock to the nervous system that shatters your illusions and leaves you desperately needing a grounding wire.
We did.
We navigated past the tempting, endless buffet of quick fix apps and weekend retreats, and we dug into the deep, necessary roots of a committed lineage.
And we explored why finding that centuries-old sourdough starter, leaning on the challenging hook of a human teacher, and letting a community hold you accountable is the only way to actually transform your daily life.
And looking at all these external structures leaves us with a fascinating, almost paradoxical conclusion.
It really does.
We discussed Joe Evans' concept of the inner teacher, the ring that you must forge to catch the hook. In many of these traditions, there is a core teaching about Buddha nature.
Right. Buddha nature is the idea that beneath all the neurosis, the anxiety, and the ego, your mind is inherently pure, awake, and fundamentally perfect.
Which flicks the entire script. If the ultimate goal of all these massive external structures, the ancient texts, the complex physical yogas, the flawed human gurus, the rigorous monastic routines, if their entire purpose is simply to wipe the dirt off the mirror so you can finally recognize your own inherent wakefulness,
then the ancient, profound wisdom you are frantically searching for out there in the world is not external at all.
Exactly. What if the ultimate spiritual anchor you are looking for at the buffet is actually just waiting to be uncovered inside your own mind today? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a great conversation.
Remember, the initial spark of discovery is thrilling. But if you want to light up your life without burning the house down, you have to do the work to install the grounding wire. Until next time, keep exploring.